Namaste. Welcome to the Om Som Yoga and Ayurveda podcast.
A space to dive into how we as humans can live more intentional, ethical, and sustainable lives.
And how we can come into harmony with ourselves, others, and nature in the process.
We share tips to help you cultivate a healthy body, a calm mind, and a strong purpose through the traditional Vedic wisdom of yoga and Ayurveda.
My name is Aaron Petty. I'm a yoga teacher, yoga therapist, a teacher trainer, but above all, a lifetime student of this great tradition.
My name is Paige Taylor. I'm a yoga teacher, an Ayurvedic health consultant, an advocate for sustainable living and lover of all beings.
And on this week's episode, we wanted to share a little bit about what's been going on in our lives recently. We have been back in Melbourne for a couple of weeks, but prior to that, where were we?
We spent about 10 weeks or maybe more so like nine weeks in India, in Rishikesh.
And going to India is something that we have been doing every year for the past few years, with the exception of those years that we all got shut up in our houses and we started this podcast. But it's something that we do every year as a way to reconnect to yoga, the source of yoga. And this year was the first year that we were lucky enough to actually start to take people over. We took a few groups over. And we just wanted to share a little bit about that experience and some reflections on India as a place, as a country, as
the origin,
as a pilgrimage. What's a pilgrimage?
Just like a journey.
Yeah, it is. It's a spiritual journey. So yeah, let's start with what is India? Why India? India has two names. India is the name given to the country or the subcontinent by the West. It's the English name. India has, as I said, two names. The second name is a Sanskrit name. And that Sanskrit name is Bharat. And I think it's really interesting because recently I've been seeing some stuff in the media about the Indian president referring to India as Bharat and like himself as the president of Bharat. And like on all of his formal invitations and stuff, he's using this, you know, ancient name of the Indian continent, the Indian land. Why it was given the name India? Do you know why it was given the name India? Because of the river that flows into that place, which is called the Indus River. And when the English came through and started to colonize that land, they gave it this name, India, after the Indus River.
And maybe you've heard of Bharata already in terms of the Mahabharata, which if you're into yoga philosophy or if you're into reading or stories of anything about this great tradition, the Mahabharata is a big story. Maha means big or great.
Epic.
Yeah, and that's what it is roughly translated as, this great Indian epic of so many incredible stories that maybe you've heard of, like the Ramayana, the Bhagavad Gita, etc. So maybe that's why you've heard that name before.
And so the word Bharat, it comes from a Sanskrit root, which is brr. And that means to bear or to carry, right? To carry something. And so what this refers to is the land that is carried by or maintained by fire. And this word Bharat, traditionally it was a name of the fire god Agni, that we now know as Agni. And just like, and I think it's really interesting because it's very similar to the ancient traditions in Australia, is that like there was a very deep relationship with fire and that the maintenance of the land was done through fire.
Of all indigenous practices, of all indigenous cultures, they all have this root of fire.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting because when you go to India, there is fire everywhere. There is always fire burning, whether that's a ceremonial fire or just someone lighting a fire on the side of the road to burn off some of their rubbish.
And even in the ghats.
Yeah.
Along the Ganga River, you can go and explore in certain parts of India that we don't really go to in Rishikesh, but that you can go and see and experience the place where they religiously or culturally burn the dead bodies in ceremony as a you know, a final offering.
It's like a final rite of passage.
Yeah, before whatever else comes.
And that's the first meaning of that name. The second meaning of that name, Bharata, there's a specific word for a philosopher in Sanskrit. A philosopher is someone who is engaged in seeking out knowledge, and they would call that person a Bharati. Hmm. And so Bharata means the land that that person would come from, meaning the land of knowledge.
Mm.
And it's the knowledge that's gifted by fire. Mm. That, you know, even the first line of the Vedas is, you know...
I bow down to fire.
I meditate on the fire.
Yeah.
The teacher who works for the benefit of all, that all of this knowledge comes from fire. It comes from spending time meditating on fire, sitting by fire, doing ritual with fire.
Mm.
And so India is this land where this knowledge comes from, the knowledge of the Vedas. And it's given us so much wisdom in our lives, the wisdom of yoga, the wisdom of Ayurveda. And I think for me, personally, being able to go and experience the cultural home of yoga is such a special thing, because yoga as lifestyle, yoga as life itself is still very alive in this place.
Mm.
And, you know, we get glimpses of yoga when we come to yoga classes at studios and that kind of thing, but we don't get to see yoga as culture.
Mm.
And so to go to India is to have that experience of yoga as a culture.
Mm.
That many things that we would consider yoga or yogic in a class setting, like mantras or, I don't know, kriyas or whatever it is, people don't even see it as yoga sometimes in India. Mm. It's just, this is just life. Part of our life.
Mm.
You know, it's not like we're going to do it to do some kind of practice. It's just something that we do because our ancestors did it.
Mm. Yeah, and yoga has almost, you know, like a bit of a bad rap in the West in terms of like how it has been stolen or also from the great tradition of India and wiped of its traditions and modified into... exercise. And so I think that it can be really, really important and really honorable as a yoga teacher, as somebody that, you know, shares from this place, shares from this lineage, this tradition, and, you know, inevitably makes money from that place. I think it really is an honorable thing to go and visit, to go and immerse, to go and find the source of the teachings, of the information, and just be a reverent practitioner and listener in that land, to allow the teachings or allow it to offer you whatever needs to come through.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's really important. I think for me, when I started teaching yoga, people would always ask me that question, like, oh, you're a yoga teacher, have you been to India? And I would just be like, oh, no, I haven't. And it really threw me off a few times. Mm. And I was just like, why do people keep asking me this?
Mm.
And, you know, it makes sense to me now because I've gone and done the thing. But then I was just like, oh, maybe there's something in this.
Mm.
Maybe there's something that I'm missing in yoga, regardless of how many teacher trainings I've done. Maybe there's something I'm missing by not fully understanding the culture that it came from.
Mm. Yeah, and you know that we do our best at Om Som to really honor that tradition and really honor and acknowledge, you know, where this information has come from. And we get such, you know, beautiful, you know, feedback and words from our students about how we bring that to life. So it really is a blessing, but a lot of it comes down from our ability to immerse in that culture and our ability to seek there, you know, that we don't need to seek so much from all these other teachers, and lineages that are so prevalent in the modern world, but that even just going and sitting in Mother Ganga in the river is enough of a teaching to share from.
Yeah, or even just going and meeting someone and having lunch with them, you will potentially learn more about yoga than you possibly could on any yoga teacher training.
Totally.
That wisdom that exists in the land is within every single person that inhabits it.
Mm.
And not only that, but just by sitting on the soil, you can receive that wisdom. It's literally everywhere. So the place that we actually go and visit in India is called Rishikesh. Rishikesh, and it's in the northern parts of India, just at the foothills of the Himalayas, and it's a very special place. Rishikesh is known as the birthplace of yoga, and you might notice within that name is Rishi, Rishikesh. What is a Rishi? A Rishi is a seer, one of the original. In the yoga tradition, there is seven rishis, one of the original seers who sat and meditated and did sadhana and
revealed.
Yeah, had the experience of the knowledge that is the Vedas. Someone who has sat for a very long time and has refined their awareness and become subtle enough to perceive the very fabric of reality is a rishi. And so it's through the grace of these seven great rishis that we have the yoga and the knowledge that we share from today.
Mm.
And so this land, Rishikesh, is the place that they chose to do their sadhana, that they would take pilgrimages to this place because it was a very spiritually potent place to do sadhana.
Mm.
It was very quiet. It was very removed from society. And there's many natural caves that are perfect for meditation practice.
Yeah, and the energetic frequency of the land is like no other. That, you know, sure, it was like a logical, you know, oh, there's some caves here and it's quiet and there's water and food and all the things that you need to go on pilgrimage. But I think even more so than that, obviously, there was like an energetic pool for these people to practice here. And why there still is that strong energetic pool for people to travel from all over the world, from all over India to experience Rishikesh.
Mm. And you mentioned a little bit before about sitting in Ma Ganga.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the most potent parts of Rishikesh is that there's this beautiful river that flows through the middle of the city. It's called the Ganges River in English, but in Sanskrit it's called Ganga. And it's not called the Ganga River, it's called Ganga, meaning that Ganga is the name of this river. They worship this river like it's a goddess.
Mm.
Well, it is a goddess.
What about a story? The story of Ganga?
Yeah, well, I was going to get there.
Good.
Eventually. But it is the most beautiful river that I've ever seen. Mm. It's just this vibrant, bright green. It flows through the middle of the city and it has its origins way up in the Himalayas. Himalayas is a Sanskrit name. Did you know that?
Yeah, I would assume so.
Hima means the abode and Alaya means... No, sorry. Alaya is an abode, somewhere that something lives, and Hima means the snow.
Oh.
The abode of the snow is the Himalayas. Well,
what's the English way of saying it? Himalayas.
Himalayas.
Yeah.
I think that's more of an American way of saying it.
Well, Himalayas.
Himalaya. And so way up in the Himalayas, there is a place called Gomukh. And Gomukh is it means the cow's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a big glacier. And from this very large opening in the glacier, this otherworldly river starts to flow out. And it flows out of this this icy gorge and then down through the mountains. And it weaves and it winds and it ends up in Rishikesh.
Mm.
And what the belief is in India is that this river was originally a heavenly river. It flowed through the heavens. And I don't want to butcher the story because it's not the clearest thing in my mind, but it comes from the beginning of the Ramayana, and there was a king and he had a thousand sons. And they disturbed one of these rishis in his meditation. The rishi was called Vishvamitra. And he got very angry and he you know, had this very angry look, and he just incinerated these thousand sons of this king. And then they were no more, and the Rishi went back to his meditation, and it was done. And so an ancestor of these thousand men that were killed by the Rishi wanted to kind of avenge them, because he felt like he needed to, it's called Tarpana, he felt like he needed to ease their souls because they were suffering. They were kind of trapped in this land and they couldn't get through to the afterlife. And so he did a very intense sadhana, and he was gifted a boon, a wish, if you will. Mm-hmm. And he asked for the heavenly river Ganga to come down to earth and flow through the land so that it could purify the souls of his ancestors. Mm-hmm. And so there was this big problem that if this river flowed down from heaven to the earth, that it would destroy the earth. And so all the gods come to Lord Shiva and they ask Shiva, will you take care of this? And Shiva, just with one strand of his hair, catches the river Ganga and, you know, breaks her fall in his dreadlocks on the top of his head. And we know that Shiva lives at the top of the Himalayas. And so what they say is that still to this day, Ganga is landing and flowing from Shiva's dreadlocks into the Gomukh, into the Himalayas, mm-hmm. and then down into Rishikesh. The beautiful thing about Rishikesh is that at that point, the Ganga is not very polluted. Yeah. As you kind of get further down the river, the pollution gets kind of worse and worse and worse. But we are way up in the top and it's really clean and clear water.
Except if it's in monsoon. And monsoon is just like the wettest season ever.
And it's not that it's dirty or polluted. It's just dirt that's flowing in off the banks.
Yeah, it's not like rubbish. It's just dirt. It's just nature. But yeah, it was really interesting this year to see Ganga in all of its states, because we were there for so long that we were there right at the end of the monsoon, where the river was still quite high and still quite dark and brown from the landslides that happened. And as we left, it was this beautiful green blue color. So yeah, really, really cool to see. And interestingly, a lot of people do the rafting there. White water rafting, that kind of thing. And we keep getting asked if we've done it.
We've never done it.
We haven't done it. I don't know about it, but it looks popular.
It is. And so the river's the main attraction. And that's why people come to Rishikesh mainly, is to go and have this experience of this river Ganga. And what they say is that taking a dip in this river will purify us of our past karma, and it will purify us of all of our stress. Mm. And so for us, it's like Ganga is this one of the main reasons that we make our journey to India each year. And it's also the reason why many people travel all the way across the country, sometimes by foot, to go to Rishikesh and take this bath. So they did some scientific studies on the Ganga, and what they found was that there were specific antimicrobial and antiviral qualities in the water, these little microbes that actually are purifying to human bodies.
That's so interesting.
And if you, when you go and you step into this river, you know that kind of like silvery hue that it has? Like if you look at it, it's almost like it's made of silver, like a flowing metallic. And yeah, and it's got a really high amount of silica in it, which is kind of like if you ever see those pure white beaches that are just like the most incredible thing, that white sand is silica as well. And it's also what we use in our like our computer chips and that kind of stuff. But that also naturally is occurring in this river. So it's just one of the most beautiful rivers, and, you know, it's self-purifying, self-cleaning, and, spiritually its significance in India is that of, it is a living goddess, that, the gods and goddesses in the yoga tradition are said to only reveal themselves to a rishi, someone who really purifies their intellect and purifies their consciousness. But Ganga is the one deity, the one god or goddess, which reveals itself to the naked eye. And for that reason, it is very, very special. I think also just like when you set foot in this town every night, what you see is people lining the banks of the river and, you know, lighting fires and lamps, And they do this I don't know if you would call it a performance, but more ceremony. Of a ritual, a ceremony called Ganga Aarti. Aarti means it's a form of worship, and it's worshipping with fire. So you're offering with a tray a fire to a statue of a god or some kind of god. And so each night all of these people come out, they line the banks of the river, and they offer this fire with mantras and chanting and song. And, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people come to these gatherings to worship this living goddess, this river, every single night. And it's like nothing I've ever seen. Like, there's nothing here in Melbourne that happens every single night. I mean, people just go into their houses and watch the TV. And so it's just like, it's such a different cultural experience to what we have here in Australia. I think that is probably another one of the main things, apart from Ganga, is just like, for me, I feel like in Australia we miss culture. We're missing culture. There's not a deep connection to the culture of our land.
Yeah, and firstly, just like honoring the traditional owners of this Australian land, that like, you know, have been stripped of everything.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of us come to yoga, is because we don't have a connection to the culture of this land that we live on.
Mm.
That it's been hidden from us going through Western school systems and living in the society that we do. That yes, there are many people in Australia who do live in connection with the land and live in connection with that culture, but for a lot of us it's not so easy to access in our everyday lives. Mm. And so we live in these societies that connection has been severed, the spiritual connection has been severed.
Mm. That
we don't really have any cultural practices or religious practices. As much as there are many different religions and cultures that come and congregate and live together, as a society, Australian culture is like drinking.
Mm.
And I don't know, VB and footy. And pies. I don't know. And that's it. And it's like, so we've grown up in this culture where there's not much of a culture. And so we're missing something. We're lacking something.
Mm.
And for a lot of us, then we're seeking something. Mm. And so we go to India and we see something that's completely different to that. We see a culture that's embedded in everyday life, that people don't just go home after their work day and flick on the TV and zone out or have a glass of wine. They go down to Ganga and they do worship, or they go to temple and they do some puja, or they congregate on the streets and have chai together. That there's just such a community aspect to the way that they live, and also a deep connection to the divine in the way that they live.
Mm.
That simple process of daily ritual, I think, is a big one for me.
Mm.
That every day there is some ritual to honor nature or to honor divinity.
Mm.
Where we were staying at the retreat center that we were staying at, every day at 6 p.m. there was a puja, and the staff would gather together and they would do worship on Shivalingam. And for us, it was just like the most beautiful offering that we could go and be involved. Like, it was never, you know, it's only for the staff or it's only for the locals. It's always like anyone is welcome.
Yeah.
Anyone is welcome in these ceremonies.
It's a love of sharing.
Yeah, just an incredible openness to sharing their culture and an incredible gratitude for us to be interested in these cultural practices. And that not only are they sharing just the ceremony with us, but they always want to share why they're doing this specific ceremony, whether it's, you know, the full moon or the new moon or this change of a season or a specific god or a specific aspect of nature or a specific planetary cycle.
Mm.
There's a ritual around literally everything that happens in life, every transit, every cycle, every season, every piece of nature, the sun, the moon, the water, the mountains, the earth, the fire, all of it is included in that, and all of it is celebrated as sacred. And because of that, I feel like no one's ever lonely in India.
I don't know. I think that's a big call. I don't know if you can say that.
But there's these huge community gatherings that are happening all the time. And I find like I come home and yes, we're lucky that we have the studio and that we have these community gatherings where people come and we do yoga things. Mm. But for a lot of us, there's not much community gatherings. It's
even,
like,
even we were chatting the other morning at yoga in studio, I mean, about like weddings and like, one of the girls was like, you know, I went to a wedding and there was about 200 people. And we're like, 200 people? And then, you know, a couple of our Indian students walk in and we're asking them about, you know, weddings. One of our good Indian student friends was just like, there was 800 people at my wedding and my sister had 1,000. So she had hers first and then mine got cut to 800 people. And just like unfathomable amount of community that like it's just like everybody's welcome, like doesn't matter if I don't know you or I have no idea who you are, I've never met you before in my life, like come. And I think that just speaks to that essence that arises from this beautiful place. It's just like deep sense of community and inclusivity of everyone.
Yeah, totally. And that like always there's food and it's shared with everyone. That people come together and they're laughing and they're talking and they're chummy and, you know, close. And, again, we just like, for a lot of us in the West, we
there's gather. Exclusivity.
Yeah, and we gather in commercial places instead of communal places. That the communal places have almost been taken away from us. Like, we have parks and recreational reserves, but apart from that, like there's no town center, there's no cafe sprawled out on the street. Everything's kind of been privatized. And because of that, it makes it exclusive, maybe inaccessible. Maybe there's a barrier to entry.
Absolutely.
Whereas, you know, in Rishikesh, you walk down the street and there's a group of people sitting and you're alone and they say, come and sit with us. Mm. Maybe you don't even speak the same language, but they want you to come and sit and they'll offer you chai and they'll offer you food and let you be a part of whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah. And I think that for the most part, like when you think of India or when you tell someone that you travel to India, they just have some kind of other idea of what it looks like in their head.
Well, I was talking with someone the other day about this actually, and she was saying that she was a teacher and she was a teacher and she was head of like something to do with culture, cultural
studies
or something like that. Anyway, and she was saying that she gave a presentation once about India because she was Indian, and the pictures that they were shown in schools of India were just like the slums. Middle of Delhi.
Yeah.
People like crammed into buses and trains and then slums, people living on top of people, on top of people, on top of people.
And let's not forget that exists, but like India is a massive, massive country.
Yeah. And so many times we would post something on Instagram and Paige's grandma specifically would message us and be like, are you sure this is India? Because this is not anything that I ever imagined to be in India.
And it's like where we go is stunning.
It's the most beautiful place you've ever seen.
I agree. Like it's just the most beautiful place I've ever been to and probably ever will be. And there's just some kind of feeling and pull that constantly leads me back. But it's just stunning.
And it's the only way I can describe it is magic. That like everywhere you look there is magic there. Yeah,
absolutely.
And so it gives us this opportunity to like understand how even with very little possessions, we can live yoga in every moment, and not by just doing the asanas, but by living the yamas and niyamas, living that connectedness, the experience of yoga that is connectedness to other people, to nature, to the world around us, to a community, to a God, to whatever it is that we're interacting with. having that union with that. And you get to see that. You get to immerse in it. And it's like nothing that you could ever imagine. I always have a bit of culture shock when I come back to Melbourne because I'll walk down the street and no one wants to even look me in the eyes. Mm. It's like you walk past someone and they kind of either look at their phone, they look at the ground, or they look off in another direction before they catch eyes with you. In India, it's the opposite.
Mm.
That you walk down the street and everyone is locking eyes with you in the most intense way. So it's like they're staring into your soul. They want to see the deepest parts of you.
Mm.
And culturally, like, you know, you go into India the first time from the West and it's like, well, that's a culture shock. But then you spend so much time in India that it becomes second nature. You understand it through the lens of yoga. You come back to home and it's like, home is a culture shock. Mm. That like there is so much disconnection in the society that we live in. Mm. And going to India, we get to really immerse in something that's completely different.
Mm.
We're going to pause the podcast here for a moment and give you a word from our sponsor.
Which is us. Don't go anywhere.
So we wanted to tell you about our yoga teacher training programs, which are happening in 2024.
Specifically our advanced Tantra and the Chakras 300-hour teacher training. For those of you who are already a qualified yoga teacher, who have already completed a 200-hour training with us or with any yoga school, this is an opportunity to experience India, to experience Rishikesh as we have been sharing in this episode and as we have been sharing on social media, an opportunity to dive deeper into your practice part-time in Berwick or online if necessary. Chat to us more about that, but we are definitely open to making that work.
We have created this training in a more traditional format than the modern, chunk it all up into a six-week period.
Mm.
We have decided to expand this training over what is almost an entire year.
Mm.
It starts with 7 weekend modules from January to July. And those will be done in Berwick, or they could also be done online if you don't live in Melbourne. Then we meet in Rishikesh, which we have been telling you about, for a 2-week immersion into all things sequencing, yoga nidra, mudras, and so much more. But this training is the culmination of everything that we have learned, studied, and practiced over the last little while.
Mm.
And it is something that we feel so, so passionate about at the moment. We've just finished the intake for our 2023 300-hour program, and it was the most amazing experience, not only for us, but everyone else involved as mm-hmm. well.
And this training will be running next year, 2024, and then it will be running every 2 years after that, we believe. Because it's a big commitment. It's a big training. But we already have such an epic group of people joining us in 2024, and we can't wait to see who else is interested. So if you have any questions or anything you want to chat to us about, please get in touch. The best way, there's never any salesy pressure from us, but the best way we can help and support you in any way is just by touching base with us. We're offering like 12-month payment plans, extended payment plans as necessary to be able to make sure that you feel supported and this training feels sustainable for you.
Okay, back to the podcast. Mm. That was a fun ad break. Okay, so we wanted to tell you guys a couple of little stories from our trip and about some of the people that we met and that made our trip special.
Mm.
We were so lucky this year because we have found the most incredible retreat center that I've ever seen in my entire life.
Mm.
This retreat center is not in Rishikesh City. If you go into the city of Rishikesh, it's kind of chaotic. It's kind of what you expect out of India. Mm. Not so much like the big cities, but it's kind of like a small version of that where there's like honking and there's cows on the road and there's dogs everywhere and there's people everywhere and there's people trying to sell you stuff and it's people yelling and it's chaos.
Mm.
And so we decided we don't want to stay in the chaos. We are teaching a yoga training. We want it to be tranquil. We want it to be silent. We want to experience the mountains of the national park. And so we're about half an hour out of the city. It takes half an hour to drive to this retreat center, and then you've got to go up this big windy driveway that's like a roller coaster, and then you get there and it's like, what the hell is this place?
Yeah,
So it's really, really beautiful. And I think spending time kind of living in this retreat environment for us, it just made it so, so special.
Absolutely.
And so it was a little bit different to our past experiences in India, because in our past experiences, we've been doing a lot of traveling. Whereas this time, we actually just had the same room for 9 weeks.
Yeah.
And we were working and we were teaching, and we had, you know, three different groups come and join us at different periods. And so we really got to cultivate some solid relationships with the people around us and the people who are working at the retreat center. And I think having that space and having those people around made it really special for us this year.
Absolutely.
Can you stop playing with that thing? It's distracting me. So when we went to... What?
I'm just mocking you, just like playing with your hands and your fingers all the time.
I've been playing with my hands and fingers. Maybe I have subconsciously. Well, when we had our yearly astrology appointment this year, our astrologer told us that there would be a reunion from a past life. And it was said to fall bang in the period where we were going to India. And so we were running the 200-hour training, and we were looking for a pundit who was going to do the closing ceremony with us, a fire ceremony. And we asked the people at the retreat center, because we trust them, can you organize for us a pundit to come and do the ceremony for us? And they organized this pundit to come, and he was an absolute legend. Very often, the pundits in India are kind of like, how would you describe it? Almost like commercial, like they want something from you sometimes. What?
No, I don't know. I think that it depends. Like, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. They just want to get paid.
They want to get paid. Yeah,
but I mean, like, on top of that, there's so many different pundits. I don't think you can put them into a box. But I think that sometimes the pundits don't speak very good English. Sometimes they don't think you're really interested in learning about why, or they're not interested in telling you why. Sometimes, yeah, like, if they're real pundits, they won't ask for money. It's all donation-based anyway. But... yeah, this Panditji that we met, he was incredible. He sat down with us and, you know, learned about us, asked us about us, and, you know, offered the most incredible ceremony where he not only, you know, allowed us to be involved physically.
But he taught us.
He taught us. And he shared with us the wisdom of the Yagya of the fire ceremony. And it was a very, very welcoming experience for us. Because we hadn't really formed a personal connection with the pundit.
Or really any teachers in India.
Yeah, or really any
like
teachers
we
in
have,
India.
We have teachers, we do have Indian teachers, and we have teachers who learned from Indian teachers, but we've never been to India and
met a teacher. Yeah.
Right? Most of our teachers have been either through online pathways or people that we've met at home. Or in other countries. But every time we've been into India, we've never found a connection with a teacher. And this time we met a Panditji, and he was an incredible teacher. And he taught us so many things. But I think what was also interesting about this Panditji was that he wasn't very old. He was like a couple years older than me.
And he was like really authentic and sweet. And I mean, it's pretty common in India that the Panditjis will like mid-ceremony like pick up their phone and like answer a call and like that. But he was just like really authentic in the way he offered himself and spoke to us and owned, you know, his experience and his personality.
Yeah. And
he was very personable.
Yeah, he was. And he really appreciated us spending that time with him and asking questions of him. And we ended up going over to his house for lunch and meeting his wife and his kid. And, you know, he would drive us around in his car. And it was just a really sweet interaction with someone who has far more knowledge than we possibly ever could. Like, this man spent 12 years studying the Vedas from, you know, the age of 12. They start studying. And, you know, the level of Sanskrit is just beyond anything that we could ever hope for in our lifetime, most likely. And just to have someone of that caliber, of that level of knowledge, just say, you know, you are my friend, please come to my house for dinner. It's just one of those things that makes life in India so special.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any personal stories that you want to share from the trip that were highlights for you?
I mean, I think just being able to learn from the culture without the barrier of language, like I think that the feeling and the essence of yoga is so universally understood, especially in India, that, you know, we learned so much from a specific man there that spoke very, very little English. And, you know, I'd been learning Hindi as well, so my Hindi was very, very low as well. But that we managed to communicate through this broken language of English and Hindi, that it was just magic. That it didn't matter what we said or what he said, that we understood what was being said. And that, you know, he was the man that taught us our puja every night, and then we offered to Shiva every night. And just the amount of devotion, the amount of care, and the amount of love that he offered this ceremony as if it was his life's calling. And that, you know, building that relationship for 2 months, like seeing the enjoyment and the excitement in his face every time that we would see him, every time that we would say namaskar, every time that he would walk us down to the river. It was a really, really beautiful connection. Mm. And that we really valued just seeing, yeah, like somebody living so authentically. And I think that's what I loved about our retreat center, was that the staff were just so genuine and so caring. And that isn't necessarily something I'd experienced too much in India before, that like a lot of the staff are kind of like here, that they're just like going through the motions, they've got a fancy job and they're doing the things, and yeah, but it's kind of rare to find like a yoga retreat where they all live and breathe yoga. And not necessarily that they all practice the physical asanas, but there's just so much connection within them all. And obviously living there for 8 weeks and working from that, like there was a lot that, you know, I asked of them and a lot they asked of me and us, I mean, but specifically me communicating with them every day about little things. Just the amount of attention to detail and care that they offered us was just exponential.
And some of them spoke absolutely no English. Mm. Like there was this one man who swept the driveway every day. Oh, and he would start at like about the same time as we would start practice, so about 6 o'clock in the morning. And he would sweep this driveway from top to bottom, and it would take him all day. He had this big sweeping broom that was taller than him. And he would just sweep, and he was the most happy, jolly man. And every morning he would stop sweeping, he would look you in the eyes, and he would say namaskar sir, and he would try his absolute best to connect with you in any way that he could. And, you know, after seeing this person every single day, there was this real fondness and this relationship that existed beyond words. But you know, without knowing anything about this person, we felt so connected to him.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's like those little moments of connection that make these trips so, so, so special.
Yeah.
And I think also what was really cool was that most of the people that came to practice with us came from the studio, like came from Melbourne. There wasn't any
just like one.
There wasn't anyone from overseas. There wasn't really anyone that we didn't know. It was kind of like our community coming together in a different location.
And not only that, but it was like community that maybe hadn't spent so much time together before, but like that we knew all quite well. And just seeing everyone mingling and loving on each other in the best way possible was just so nice. Like if you've been on a retreat or a training, you understand the bond that's formed in those environments. And yeah, this was like no other, that, you know, every group had something special to offer and something special to teach us as guides, as teachers, that, you know, it's breathtaking that we get to do this for work, and we We're so grateful for the opportunity and so grateful for all of you that do choose to trust us and support us in this way so that we can continue to offer these experiences that are just otherworldly.
Yeah. And it was so sweet. Some of the ladies who did our retreat actually went on like a whole trip together and they hadn't ever really spent any time together, but like six of them just took off on this tour around India together. And then they got to us and they're all just like best friends.
Yeah. It's so cute.
And so, yeah, it's just like those little things that you get from trips like this that you just wouldn't get anywhere else. And we had so many people that said to us, you know, like, I would never spend this kind of money on myself, or I've never taken myself on a holiday, or I've never really done anything like this for myself. But I'm so grateful that I did it. And so, yeah, I think like for anyone out there, like listening to this podcast that, you know, you're like, oh, you know, that sounds fun, but I would never do it. I think just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it. Just go on a yoga retreat. Even if it's not a teacher training, go on a yoga retreat. Go and immerse yourself. If you practice yoga, you deserve to immerse yourself in practice for a week or five nights or whatever it is in some beautiful location where there's silence and the noise of the outside world is shut out.
And we are running a retreat in Bali next year in May, and we will be running one in India next year in October, I believe. But it is coming out in the new year. So keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah.
There's definitely opportunity to retreat with us next year. And, you know, there's so many different yoga schools, there's so many different yoga businesses out there that, you know, it's oversaturated to the max. But, you know, if you enjoy this podcast and if you enjoy the work that we do and what we offer, like, it would mean the absolute world if you chose us to retreat with and you chose to support our little business with a financial commitment, a financial investment of retreating with us, and that will give you so much back in return.
And I think like there is so much that you can gain from that kind of immersion that you will potentially never gain out of a class situation, that to actually step away from your life and not just go on a holiday like you normally would, where, you know, you go stay in a hotel for a few days, you eat some fancy food and you drink some alcohol and you hang out. This is like, I am retreating from the world and I am going inwards and I'm spending hours a day practicing and I'm around like-minded people and I'm doing workshops and I'm reflecting on my life. So many people came away from the retreat with just a whole new direction for their life and all of this creative inspiration with what they want to create in the world and where they're going to go and what they're going to do. And I think that it's so nice sometimes to just take that break from life and you know, redirect your focus a little bit.
Yeah, it offers like a reset almost. It's just like a, let's break this rhythm of life. Let's take a moment, a pause, and like reset yourself in whatever way feels most authentic.
Yeah.
It's magic.
And traditionally, like that's how yogis would do it. They would take retreat. They would take sannyasin and they would go away from their life and their society and they would go up to the mountains and they would live in a cave for a few months and do their sadhana, do their meditation practice, do their asanas, self-reflect, connect in deeply and then come back with that wisdom and apply it to their life.
Totally.
That it's a very traditional way of doing practice. And you know, as much as in some way it's been commercialized, it really has that essence that like this is why we like to go every year, is because every year we get this opportunity to take a step back from life and society and interact with yoga in a way that we wouldn't normally get to. And yeah, I think just like India is great for that reason and that reason alone, that you get to experience a culture steeped in yoga. You get to interact with people who have lived their entire life in a culture steeped in yoga. And that is something that you could never get from a 60-minute class.
Totally.
Anything you want to add?
I mean, it just makes me a little bit sad, like I miss it. And I'm excited to be back next year as well, and I'm happy to be home, but yeah, like it's just like my heart is there, my heart is there and my heart is here. So it's, you know, it's an interesting feeling.
Yeah, it is an interesting feeling. I think that if we didn't have the studio here and a house and stuff, I probably just wouldn't have come home.
No, I would have come home. I like the food. I like the food here too much.
I like the food there too much.
Oh my God, the food there is incredible. But maybe that's a funny little antidote. Is just like that we have what we think is like a 2-3 week hump of the food getting a little bit repetitive. And we saw it on the 200 hour that like it got to a point where they all just wanted hot chips. They wanted plain pasta. They wanted something that wasn't Indian curries and rice. And, you know, I got sick and then I didn't want to eat that. I had a very low appetite. I was eating the beige foods. And then I revamped my love for it and I came back to the soups, to the dals, to everything. And yeah, just like the food there is just so incredible. And it's all Ayurvedic. There's no onion, no garlic. It's literally a dream for us. So
That's my awesome. Digestion had never been better. Yeah.
And then on our way home, we got to the Delhi airport and we absolutely smashed a mixed spicy veggie patty burger. I have
the best picture of Paige just chowing down on this McSpicy.
Yeah, just like even the takeaway options there just had so many good vegetarian options. But we felt absolute crap after that, especially with such incredible food and such incredible digestion for so long that was the first thing we smacked ourselves with. And
a bit of McDonald's, 6-hour flight, and then some Hungry Jacks.
Oh my God, it was good though.
Very naughty.
Yeah, no, not naughty.
Okay, indulgent, very indulgent.
Exactly.
I think just like anyone who practices yoga, gift yourself that opportunity.
Oh my God.
Go and experience India. It's just like it is the home of yoga. And if you're practicing yoga, to understand its culture is like nothing else.
And take our word for it. Like, it's just like you have to go. You have to.
Yeah. And not like to guilt you if you haven't gone, because you're still practicing and you still have that connection. It doesn't really matter if you go or you haven't. But if you do practice and if you do value the tradition of yoga,
it's just like an experience.
It's worth making it happen.
An experience of a lifetime. And the way I always describe Rishikesh is just it's a place like no other and that is indescribable with words. That it's a feeling and that you just have to go to experience it.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you go to a place and it's like without interacting with any people, without tasting any food, there's just a feeling there. And the feeling in this place is yoga.
Yeah, oh, that's the best.
It just touches your heart in this way that only your practice does. That like you can have that feeling that like, why do we all come back to our mat for that feeling?
Yeah.
That feeling that you get after a practice or during a practice. Yeah. Like that's why we come to our mat. That's why we continue to practice. And that feeling exists in every single corner of this city.
It's the best.
Yeah, it is the best. So make it happen. And if you want to come with us, come with us. Keep an eye out on our website. We'll be releasing the details very, very soon.
Or even shoot me a message so that I know you're interested. So first in.
Best dressed.
Best dressed.
That's the saying.
I might open.
Best dressed.
Might open a Instagram pre-waiting list vibe. if you're interested, let us know because it will be happening and we are very excited about it.
Okay, and some other news. I don't know if we want to share it right now. It might be a little bit of a secret taster. Normally at the end of the podcast, we talk about our online studio. We've made a decision for the online studio next year. Do you want to share it?
I mean, we haven't really completed the decision.
Oh, we haven't completed the
decision. Well, I guess.
We want to offer some more online content next year.
Yeah. Some like courses.
Some more courses, some more kind of like classes that are more accessible.
And some like sequences, like practice plans.
Yeah. So like you pay one time, you get a 30-day practice plan, that kind of thing. So I think the reason I wanted to bring it up is because our online studio is changing. Mm. So many of you have spent time on the online studio and you've done the classes. But I think for us, like that idea of just a class library that sits there, like it's almost a bit outdated.
Mm.
And it feels to me
so
like it's not
COVID
what
times.
Anyone really wants. Yeah, like it's so 2020 class library. And so we want to offer something different. And so we would love if you have any ideas, if there's anything that you want to unpack with us through a short course or, you know, like a 7-day practice plan, whether that's philosophy related or mantra related or meditation related or asana related. Like if there is something that piques your interest in any of the content that you've consumed from our podcast or from our YouTube channel that you'd like to see in a very accessible small package.
Mm.
We're thinking like $20 to $50 little packages. That's a one-time payment, and then you get access to that course's content.
Mm.
If there's anything that you want to see,
let us know.
Let us know. We would love to hear that. You can reach out to us on Instagram, on, I don't know, Facebook. There's even a chat feature on our website that you can just text one of us at any time. It'll go straight to our phones. We don't check them when we're sleeping, but all other times we do check them. So you can reach out to us there as well. And I think the final thing I'll say is that if you got something out of today's podcast, share it with someone. Share it with someone. Just go to the little link that's got the arrow and the square and press that and send the link to 5 of your friends in a direct message, a text
message.
Or into
your Instagram story.
Yeah, or you could send it to your Instagram story.
Yeah,
I
love
nice.
Seeing that. And tag us so we can see it. We'll retag it.
At omsom.yoga.
Yeah.
That's where we are everywhere. If you type in omsom.yoga in your web browser, it'll take you to us. YouTube, it'll take you to us. Instagram, Facebook, I don't know what other platforms. TikTok, we don't use the TikTok, but it's there. Probably don't
anyway,
go on the TikTok.
That's enough.
Okay, I'm going to stop talking now. Hari Om. We love you so much and we'll see you very soon.